Listener Production.
On the agenda today, we address what the AFL must do in response to the Jimmy Webster bump. We discuss which teams actually believe they can win the flag in 2024. And Melbourne's internal issues can't be as bad as they have been made out in the media. That's our take anyway. And that's all up next on Footy Talk. This is Footy Talk, your place for the latest news, interviews and analysis from the world of AFL. We are back bigger and better than ever in 2024. And every Tuesday, as we did last year, we'll have Nick Riewoldt on with myself. We'll set the agenda. We'll analyse the biggest topics and we'll chat to our great mate from over in Houston, Texas. Hello, Roo. Good to see you.
Joey, been 5 months? Didn't pick up the phone for 5 months to call and say g'day, but it's nice to see your smiling face, which means footy must be around the corner. How are you, bud?
Good, buddy. No, you were too busy, mate. I kept trying to call you and then there's your face bobbing up on ESPN, the Super Bowl coverage. Gee, you got a bit of feedback back here in Australia. Why is Nick Riewoldt giving expert analysis on the bloody NFL? Who does he think he is? But it must have been a great experience. Just give us a little bit of a recap on sort of Super Bowl week and the whole ESPN rubbing shoulders with some of the biggest names in media.
Yeah, it was awesome. A lot of pinch yourself moments. Yeah, and you're right. What was I doing giving any sort of analysis? It wasn't drawn up that way, I can promise you. But the time it was going to take the experts to get from the box down to where we were doing the halftime sort of debrief meant that at the very last second they said, hey, can you give us a bit of a halftime summary of the game? Which I knew what was coming, absolutely knew what was coming. But it was great, mate. It was a week in Vegas. I don't think I've ever been so glad to see the back of a city as I was to be flying out of Las Vegas on the Monday morning.
Was it anything like 2009, the last time we went on a footy trip to Vegas? Was it like that?
Yeah, it tore me apart. I've got to be honest.
I got some mail that the night before the Super Bowl, someone sent me a message saying they saw you at 3 a.m. pretty intoxicated. Is that true? And then you had to get up and do the Super Bowl, all that media stuff the next day?
Yeah, that's true. And it was actually a little bit worse than that.
You're not good at
hangover. No, I'm terrible. I'm shit house, Joey. Terrible. Absolutely terrible. I can't do it. And this was like day six in Vegas. So ex-CEO Gil was in town. So we went to U2 at the Sphere.
Oh, did you?
Which was unbelievable. Yeah, the night before the Super Bowl. Coolest thing ever. So that was awesome. Anyway, then there was a bit of an Aussie contingent. We ended up at XS Nightclub. The Chainsmokers were playing. And I thought, I'll be fine because the next day, the game's not until 3:30 p.m. local time in Vegas. So I can, you know, have a big sleep in and then about, you know, lunchtime cruise out to the stadium. Well, we were at XS at about 3:30 a.m. and I thought, I should probably check my call time for tomorrow, just see what time my first commitment is out at the stadium.
Yeah.
8 a.m., Joey. 8 a.m. I had to do my on-ground pre-game early, 8 a.m., because they siphoned people through the ground and I was still at the nightclub at 4 a.m. So I ran out of there pretty quick. I got about an hour's sleep and it was the longest day of my life because I had to sit out at the stadium. I couldn't get back to the hotel to have a snooze. So by the time overtime rolled around for the game, I just wanted it to end. I just wanted the whole thing to be over. But awesome week. So many moments where you just pinch yourself and another great game and Mahomes got it done again.
Yeah, well, you've ticked off a bucket list for a lot of people that would love to go to Super Bowl. So very lucky for you. Well done. But we are here to chat
very
footy.
Lucky.
We are here to chat footy and we will get into it. But just quickly, while you are in the States, what did you make of the whole NRL to Vegas? It looked like it was a big success.
Didn't hear about it, to be honest.
Really?
Didn't really resonate. Well, here in Texas, at least. I mean, I sort of try to keep a bit of a close eye on it, but I think, you know, being so close after the Super Bowl as well in Vegas might have got a little bit lost.
Well, that's going to lead straight into my first big thought because we're going to come in on a Tuesday and just bring our thoughts with us. And I want to go with off the top, and it might be a little bit controversial, but really I feel a bit jibbed. I feel like we've been sold a bit of a lemon coming into this opening round because when it got announced in, I think it was mid-November, that we were going to change it up and open the game up in the northern states, We were told that it was because the rugby was going to be in Vegas and there was going to be no NRL on it. It was a great opportunity to eat into the northern market. So even just finding an article in The Age from John Perry and Peter Ryan, two of the very best, this was in the article. So the AFL has the opportunity to leave a major imprint in Sydney and Brisbane through the second weekend of March because the NRL has opted to start its season a week earlier in Las Vegas with four teams, including marquee clubs, Brisbane and Broncos and the Sydney Roosters. These teams will have the weekend off. And it goes on saying that without the Broncos in town, the Lions have a free hit to host Carlton, etc. So then I've looked going into this weekend. You do realise there's NRL on all weekend, and it starts on Thursday night. There is NRL in New South Wales, the same time that Sydney are hosting Melbourne to start the season.
Wasn't this the whole thing, Joey, that while they're away, we're going to rob your house? Wasn't that the way the AFL pitched it? So what have they done? Have they messed up the calendar? How have they got this wrong?
I don't know, because I'm not sure this is going to have the impact. So as I said, so Thursday night, it's going to be the first NRL game in Australia for the season. So any new rugby league fan is going to be tuning in like we are for the AFL. But they've already got the momentum off the back of Vegas. So I think that's not really going to draw more eyeballs to the AFL in Sydney. And Sydney-Melbourne had 42,000, I think, at round 24 last year. So they're not going to get a bigger crowd than that anyway. So I'm not sure it really sort of resonates on the Thursday night. Then the Friday night, okay, the Brisbane Broncos not playing means the Brisbane Lions get Friday night to play Carlton. If you look at the fixture for next weekend, Brisbane Broncos play on the Thursday night. So Brisbane Lions could still play on a Friday night against a massive club and they would still have the game to themselves on Friday night. Thursday night, of course, would be Carlton-Richmond. Then you've got Gold Coast and Richmond playing on a Saturday twilight in Gold Coast on a beautiful March afternoon. I don't think they're really going to draw more eyeballs than they would if it was played next weekend, if we just kept it as traditional round one. And then Saturday night, Giants-Collingwood, which is going to be a massive game. Yes, there's no game of NRL in Sydney, but guess what? Next Saturday night, round two for the NRL. There's no Saturday night football in Sydney anyway. In fact, there's no game in Sydney. So I don't quite understand why we're bringing these games forward when they could still be part of the round one fixture next week and still have their own free airtime. So I'm just wondering whether it's defeating the whole purpose of this opening round. And as I know with Peter Volandis, he's not going to allow this to happen next year. He'll come up with something.
Did the game outsmart itself a little bit?
Well, I know it's going to happen off this weekend. Everyone will say it was a great success and there's going to be big numbers and all those sorts of things. But I reckon it would still be the case next week if we just had have kept it in round one and still had these big games on the nights when there's no NRL in town.
And so have we got the typical round one buzz leading into this week? Probably not.
No, we're probably just, it's a bit of a soft opening, isn't it? When you dive deep into it, there is NRL all weekend. And really, the way they've got the fixture sorted, they could have done that next weekend. And we could have had all nine games opening round and hit the ground running and started Thursday night with Richmond Carlton. And they could have gone from there.
Well, I'd expect you, being the hard-hitting journo that you are, to get some sort of statement from the AFL as to how they got this so wrong. We usually get it over the NRL guys, but not on this occasion. Hey, Joey, I've been thinking this week, we do a lot of guessing at this time of year as to what our top eight's going to be, who's going to be good, who's going to win it, who's going to be top four, and everyone's making their predictions. But as players, you sit there before round one and you kind of know internally, or at least you have a bit of a feeling internally as to how you're going to go. And I thought what might be an interesting exercise would be if we were to go out to all 18 clubs, we've all made our predictions, but if we were to go to all 18 clubs and gave them all the actual truth serum, we all know they're going to say, yeah, we're going to compete. We're going to play finals. We think we can, if everything goes right, we can win it. But how many teams actually think they can win the premiership as we sit here right now, if they were to answer the question honestly? And I came up with eight.
Eight?
I came up with eight. Yep. I got eight teams who I think have the confidence in themselves that if things go well for them, they can win it. I think Collingwood think they can win it, clearly. Brisbane think they can win it. I think the Swans have enough experience in that team with some young guys. I think if you really got the honest answer, I think, yep, they think they can win it. I think the Giants boys have got that swag, particularly the way they finished the season last year. They've been in grand finals before. I've been shocked at the commentary around Melbourne. I think Melbourne will come out swinging hard this year and they absolutely think they can win it. They have recently. Port Adelaide, I thought about leaving them out because I just wonder whether the scars are too deep for them because they've been so close so often. So they were a bit on the edge for me. And the other two that might surprise people that I think if you ask them, you would get an honest answer. I think the Bulldogs have been there not that long ago in a grand final.
Really?
And I think most of their best players are senior players. I think if you ask the Bulldogs honestly, if you got the Marcus Bontempelli to take the truth serum, I think he would say, yep, we can win it. And I say the same with the Geelong boys.
Yep.
So the teams that I had around the mark, like I think Carlton can win it, but I think right here, right now, they would still have that little question mark on themselves, having only just tasted it. I mean, they start the season 5-1, and that can change really, really quickly. But I just wonder right here, right now, whether they truly believe they could. St Kilda, I don't think if you got an honest answer, they think they can win it. Their best players are all kids. The Bombers haven't even been close. So for me, as it stands, I think there would only be 8 teams that if you wanted an honest answer as to whether they could win it or not, they would be the ones. Any on that list you disagree with, Joey?
The Western Bulldogs is probably the one, but you're right. They played in the grand final only a couple of years ago. I think they probably know how good they are. For them, I think they need to see it this year early in the season. They need to see it to believe it. I reckon it could go one of two ways with the Dogs this year. And I'm spot on with you with Geelong. They actually believe this is almost their version of the Chicago Bulls' last dance. They actually think they've got one more chance of winning it, and I think they'll play like it. So I actually put them just outside my top 4. I wanted to put them in, but I wasn't game enough. I put them 5th. I think they absolutely could challenge at some stage. Whether they're still good enough and still got enough under the legs, we'll wait and see. But I like that. It's a good point. And you do know as a player, you do know if you can win it or whether you're going to be around the line. I'm maybe starting to think Carlton do think they can win. I think they would have thought, you know what, we were 5 goals up against Brisbane in a prelim. We can win this. We can go one better this year. So I'm going to back in the Carlton leaders to think that they can win it.
By round 6, they'll think differently. But right now, I think they'd still be a little bit of hope. Gee, I hope we can capture what we had late in the year.
Yeah, great talk about. Hey, plenty more to come after the break. We've got to touch on St Kilda and Jimmy Webster. I want to dive a bit deeper into your thoughts on Melbourne and the talk about their off-season. And we will play Real Talk, Shit Talk again this year. You're listening to Footy Talk. If you do have a question for us, make sure you hit us up on Instagram at footytalk_pod. And on TikTok, this is Joey and Rui for Footy Talk. You are listening to Footy Talk every Tuesday throughout the year. I'll be with Nick Riewoldt and we'll discuss all the big talking points. Rui, obviously the big talking point to come out of this week has been our old mate Jimmy Webster, the St Kilda defender, who has been sent directly to the tribunal for his careless conduct, severe impact and high contact with that bump on Jai Simpkin. First of all, I think what we've noticed is that all the football community seems to be on a pretty similar page now with this. We understand where the game has got to. We understand the seriousness of concussion. So we all agree it's going to be a severe consequence and he's going to miss a number of weeks. Now, what that is, that'll be determined by the AFL. But what's your take on it from afar?
Oh, I mean, it was a howler. It was an absolute stinker. And no Jimmy, lovely guy, not a malicious guy, but it looked bad as you could possibly get with these sort of acts. I don't think anyone's denying that. I think, you know, the Saints have been on the front foot in accepting that. Jimmy, the same thing. So we're all in violent agreement that it was an absolute stinker. I think whether he gets, and now it's all about the number, right? So St Kilda have said they're going to go to the tribunal, they're going to accept whatever penalty is handed down. I think whether he gets 8 weeks or 15 weeks, it's almost irrelevant because I think once you get to a certain horizon or threshold of suspension, whether that is, you know, 6, 8, 10, 12, do we really think it's going to impact this happening again? Because in that moment, is a player really going to think, well, geez, I'll go through with it if I'm going to get 6, but not if I'm going to get 10? Like, I think we are always going to have these moments in the game, unfortunately, when players get it horribly, horribly wrong. So really the number for me from here is semantics. I think what it's up to the AFL to do is the AFL need to figure out what is the max. What is the max they're going to give for these sort of incidents and give it? And this becomes the mandate because that's as bad as it's going to get for a high bump. What I would really love to see them do to really just give us all a once and for all final indication of how strong they are on this concussion issue is for punches and elbows to the head. I'm sick of seeing 1 week, 2 weeks, or it was not sufficient force. I think they've got to come down as hard on those as they are, which are more premeditated actions, as they do sort of philosophically around the bump. So, yep, whatever the max is, give it to him because it's as bad as you get, and then start to properly enforce the strikes and the elbows to the head because it's the same thing. Let's treat the head seriously on every possible metric and level that we can within the game, whether it's deliberate, whether it's intentional, whether it's careless, whatever it is.
Yeah, well said. Hey, we'll move on because the other big talking points is coming. The games are only 2 days away. Sydney, Melbourne to kick it off. Clayton Oliver is going to play. And gee, there's been a lot of talk about Melbourne over the off-season. You mentioned something before the break. I think it's been overblown, this whole culture thing that everyone wants to talk about with Melbourne, because, and I reckon you'll agree with me here, there would be a small group of players at every club in the competition that, let's call it a scallywags, or have some off-field behavioural issues that, you know, the football club would know about, the leadership group would have to deal with, but because it's not in the public eye, there's nothing to see, you know, nothing to comment on. But because it's been so public with Joel Smith, who absolutely has done the wrong thing, silly boys mucked up, and he's going to cop his right whack and probably looking like unlikely to play for Melbourne again, and Clayton Oliver has been so public, all of a sudden, because it's in the media, it's like their culture is so much worse than every other club's. I'm not necessarily in agreement with that. I'm a bit like you. I think Melbourne, well, the playing group in particular, they are they're culturally, with their on-field performance, one of the strongest teams and clubs in the competition. Do you know, in the last 3 years, Rui, they've been outside of the top four for 2 weeks. Their female program is one of the best in the competition, being premiers recently. They've got some of the strongest leaders in the competition, led by Gawn and Petrarca and Viney and Lever and Brayshaw, unfortunately, till he retired. I'm just not necessarily buying into this. And I think Melbourne will use this playing group to galvanise, steel themselves, and I think they're absolutely a crack at trying to win this flag this season. What's your take?
Very similar to yours. So I think what you do is you start to add them up, right? So you add up the Joel Smith, Clayton Oliver and his issues, and then probably the kicker is the president putting it all out there and airing it all publicly, and we're told that that was all occurring around the time that they won the flag. So I'm not sure you can stack up the results that Melbourne have if the culture's as bad as the industry is making out from the outside. I mean, I think you're absolutely right. Once it becomes public and you can be lucky and unlucky and you can manage things well and poorly, and I think there's probably been a combination of all of those aspects at play here for Melbourne. And then the fact that the ex-president has come out so strongly, he might have been vindicated by a lot of what he has said. But I don't think that necessarily translates in comparison to poor culture compared to the rest of the teams, because they've delivered results on the field. So, yeah, I don't think they've got 40 clean skins in their team at Melbourne. But what I do think they've got is I think they've got outstanding leadership in the key positions, starting with Max Gawn as the captain, that has been able to keep the group accountable enough to perform at really, really high standards. So, yeah, look, I've been a little bit shocked at the narrative around Melbourne. I still think they've got one of the best game styles, one of the best lists in the competition. The issue for me is on field, and that's how they solve their forward 50 issues.
Yeah, and I don't think losing two finals, when you actually go back and watch those games, had anything to do with culture. Or, I mean, if you just couldn't convert, and conversion has nothing to do with what was happening Monday to Friday. And if they win one of those two games, it's a completely different story if they win a final, I think, and make it to another grand final. And a lot of ifs, but
If you had line betting on Clayton Oliver's career goes in an upward trajectory from here or he spirals, which way are you leaning?
It's a great point, Rue, because I've put some thought into this. And what if we see a better version of Clayton Oliver from here on in? What if this period of his life has humbled him a little bit, has made him grow up a little bit and mature? What level could he go to from what he's already done? So if we've heard what he was like off field and he's already won 4 BNFs and been a multiple Australian and one of the top 10 players in the game, where could he go? And it's not, wouldn't be surprising if he did go to another level, because we've seen it with players in the past. And we can say, Dustin Martin had some issues early in his career. Toby Green
had some issues.
Jordan DeGoey. And look at those three now. They are three of, you know, they're going to go three of the all-time greats. And they are wonderful leaders and been enormous for their footy clubs. Clayton Oliver could do something similar.
Yeah.
So I'm fascinated to watch him this year. Oh, I think he's going to have a bit of a resolve about him and we could see a better version of Clayton Oliver. And that's what I'm hoping for and maybe put to bed a lot of the conversation that's gone on over the summer.
If that was the line, we all want to see the improved version. Hey, just one that I'm really excited to see this year, and it focuses on a couple of senior players. I was thinking about Brody Grundy this week and how close he was to being a premiership player at Collingwood when he was a Collingwood player. He arrives at Melbourne just a little bit too late. He leaves Collingwood just a little bit too early. And now he goes to a team that is well and truly in contention off on the back of him and another senior player in Taylor Adams, whose story is not too dissimilar. I can't wait to see what version of Brody Grundy we see this year. I think it's going to be one of the great watches, and to see Sydney competing and back there again in September and Brody Grundy to be at the forefront is a story that I hope we see unfold over the next 6 months.
Yeah, great one. Hard to get a read on for me, the Sydney Swans, and even Brody Grundy. Like, it depends which way you want to look at it. It was 5 years ago. You know, it was 2017, 2018 was when he was at, or 2019 when he was at his absolute best. That's a fair while ago now. But then you say, well, the games he played last year without Gawn, he still showed he's one of the best ruckmen in the comp.
Yeah.
Sydney Swans a bit the same. Are we going to see the Sydney Swans of the 2022 version that are this young, exciting, talented team that are going to go really, really deep? Or are we going to see a Swans of 2023 that were inconsistent? Some of their star players were up and down. You know, where's it going to be? So there are lots of teams, and we'll touch on them in coming weeks, Rui, about some of these teams. I'm also fascinated, and we'll dive maybe next week into St Kilda. From what I've seen over summer, gee, maybe I've underestimated what they are capable of, because we know about the Ross Lyon coach teams and how good they'll be, but now they've added talent. That's what we've been critical of, the lack of talent on the list. It's starting to build. We'll chat about them in recent weeks. But before we wrap up, we've got to get going. We will play Real Talk Shit Talk this year, just bringing up basically some of the conversation and storylines from a Monday and whether they're exaggerated or whether we think there's something real in them. So speaking of St Kilda, I'll throw the first one at you. And this is our good mate, Kane, who's very good at coming up with content and talking points. He suggested
he's the best.
That Mitch Owens playing in the ruck is the worst possible decision that Ross Lyon has made. What the hell is he doing? Do you agree that Mitch Owens should never, ever play in the ruck?
Why do you have to make me go Kane this early in the season? That hasn't even started yet.
Fire it up.
Rossi doesn't make too many bad decisions. And I don't think this one is as bad as you think when you actually drill down into it. So, I mean, when was the last time we saw a ruckman get really badly injured in at centre bounce? And I know, like, centre bounce is really the only thing we're talking about here, and I think Kane might have said that. And I agree with part of it, and that is that centre bounce is bloody scary, particularly if you're not used to being in there. But I'm pretty confident that the instruction wouldn't be, hey, Mitch, we need you to jump up and try and tap this like Nick Natanui. Like, I think it would be just hedge your bets a little bit in at centre bounce. And then once centre bounce is done with, all bets are off. You're not going to get hurt playing ruckman around the ground. I mean, they stand next to each other and wrestle for boundary throw-ins. And once the ball hits the deck, you've got a big advantage. So I think you're more likely to get hurt playing centre half forward than you are playing in the ruck, as long as you take care of him at centre bounce. So, yeah, that's probably a little bit of shit talk from Kano there. We're off to a flyer. Love you, Kane. He's the king of content, and I love his work. Hey, Joey, one for you. The criticism of Harry Mackay's goal-kicking technique is absolutely crazy. That's according to his teammate, Nick Newman. Real or shit talk?
No, that's shit talk, because the goal-kicking technique issues is real for Harry Mackay. I made a comment after the Pracky match last week. He played really well in the game against Melbourne. He took 10 marks. He was taking contested marks. He kicked 3 goals and shanked 2. I've almost said I think Carlton himself, the fans, need to almost accept now that it's going to be part of Harry Mackay, that he'll kick some goals, but he will spray some. And it's almost just understand it and accept it. He'll keep working on the training, no doubt, but don't let it become a big thing if he kicks one out on the full from 30 metres out. I think that it's just going to be part of him now, and sometimes you just need to accept it. So I think there's definitely a shit talk. He's got some issues, but he's still going to be a very, very important player, and I love seeing him in the second ruck. I think he needs to do more of that. Hey, one more for you. This is from John Longmire. So we know Gather Round is going to be in South Australia for a couple more years, but John Longmire says it is a no-brainer that Gather Round has to move to Sydney in the future.
I think it's possible, yeah, like share the love. I don't know about a no-brainer. I mean, Adelaide did a pretty good job with it last year, the planning for this year. I think they're moving games to the Barossa, Joey. So, you know, they've made it their own. I'm not sure it's a no-brainer, but if the AFL decide we can take the game around the country, you know, and Tassie gets a team up in 3 or 4 years, well, then might have Gather Round down in Tassie, Joey.
Hey, just get one team first, Roo. Just get one team first. Come on. Yeah. Got to get it over the line.
It's not far away. Not far away. They got the announcement coming up soon. Hey, that's a good topic as well. We'll get into the dream team for Tassie in the next few weeks. What would be the best like hierarchy of people involved in that team? Last one for you before we go, Joey. Preseason's done and dusted. Can you make anything of it?
Not too much. You've got to take everything in preseason with a grain of salt. We've seen it in the past. You can get an idea on players, maybe some team styles, but in regards to the real deep analysis, you've got to wait until we see 3-4 weeks of footy first. So I think it's given us a bit of an appetizer. We think we've got an idea, but we'll see some teams come out of nowhere that might have played really ordinary in these preseason games, be a top team, and maybe some sides we're pretty bullish about that might disappoint.
Just give me one that you're real bullish about after preseason and one that you're slightly worried about.
With a grain of salt, as I touch on, I probably rated the Giants a tad low. I think I had them maybe sixth in my preseason predictions before these practice matches. Now watching them, I think, well, they're absolutely top two, top four.
Yeah, like it.
Carlton is the one that have made me slightly nervous after two preseason games. I've been at them both live against Geelong and against Melbourne. I've had them in my top four. We'll chat about it in the coming weeks, Rube, but I'm just worried about the way they move the ball and the fine line between trying to get it in quick to Charlie and Harry, but then also not just bombing it into Charlie and Harry and hoping that they just take contested marks. We'll touch on that another time. Plenty still to play. They've got a nice start to the season. Hey, nice start by you too, Rui. You're looking sharp. Gee, you look good as always. You're getting better looking with age. Nice to see you in your new office over there Houston. And we'll be back next Tuesday to do it all again. Remember, if you are listening on Spotify, please hit the bell to be notified when we drop a new episode. And of course, tomorrow, Nathan Broad will join Abby Holmes and Jack Heverin at the Players' Viewpoint. So looking forward to that. Until next Tuesday, we'll see you. Listener.